Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by Harry.
Hello.
And I am Josh. And we are going to be talking about today how corporations exploit ordinary people. And there are a couple of reasons for this. One, I'm quite annoyed by some companies that have tried to screw me over. But two, and the main one really, is that, you know, we're in a difficult financial time, and I think it's important to talk about all the different ways in which companies will try and screw you over so you can save some money. We're going to try and return some of the value of your Lotus Eater subscription back to you by...
I mean, I hope you already do that just with all of the excellent content that we produce, but just in case you really weren't sure just yet, there's this podcast just for you.
Mm-hmm. And of course, one final sort of caveat is I wanted to cover this because I am a self-described libertarian, and yet I'm criticizing the private sector. Oh my goodness.
Well,
I'm going to libertarian hell now.
No. There's a fun thing here, which I wouldn't describe corporations as existing in anything near a private sector as it is. For one, to become a corporation, you need a charter from the government, which immediately means that you are going to have to get approval from the government. You're going to be regulated heavily by the government. And in all likelihood, you're at the sort of size of business where the government and people within the state have already been heavily involved in whatever it is that you're producing. You've already probably built up ties and relationships. You and I, for instance, if we applied for a charter for a corporation, we would get denied immediately, not just because of the fact that I don't know exactly what we would be selling between the two of us, perhaps apples and oranges, but also just because of the fact I very much doubt that the government would want us to have any kind of large-scale influence over culture. It's impressive enough that we get to operate as a website and also on YouTube as it is, because corporations come with a large, very, very heavy amount of cultural influence in the way that they operate and how they can manipulate public opinion and such. So I wouldn't say that you're being anti-libertarian. Just even though I'm no longer a libertarian myself, I don't think that you have to really start to prostrate yourself over this particular contemplation. So
my general argument is that organizations are made up of people, both government and private, and the people can have bad ideas.
Makes enough sense. Just because of the fact that you support your own conception of the free market doesn't mean that every organization that pops up in that free market is going to be good or even have your best interests in mind.
Exactly. And that's another thing I wanted to kind of touch on. But mainly I want to look at the practices that seem to me to be rather slimy and dishonest, and things that are legal but still questionable.
Oh, yes.
Will.
I can definitely give some good insight on this. I don't know about your previous employment history, but mine, I have worked for one. I won't name them because I don't know if it would be libelous or if they would be able to sue me for it, but I have worked for a phone insurance company in the past, over the phones, both front of house, answering calls when people have damaged their or lost their or had their phone stolen and they called to claim on their insurance, and then also in the complaints department. And that's when you get really tricksy. I have been, sadly, a foxy, tricksy bastard in the past with some people. You watching this right now, if you're unfortunate to have come across me on the other side of a particular phone insurance call back in the day, maybe between the years of 2015 and 2016, I would like to formally apologize to you. I was only doing my job. I felt bad about it. Well, no, actually, when you work in complaints for long enough, your emotions dull to the point that they barely exist anymore.
I mean, you shouldn't apologize because I think you're probably one of the few English people that are involved in the call center work. I think
You
deprived a hardworking Indian of their job.
And I should be proud of that, yes.
They are taking over after all.
Every single call that I had to take that ended up having to go to India, don't worry. All of you who hate dealing with Indian people on the phone, the English people who have to deal with them on the phone to transfer you through, we hate them as well. One prick left me on hold for an hour while I was trying desperately. All this customer needed was one simple question answering. The guy refused to give me the answer and said, you'll need to transfer him through to me, and then left me on hold for an hour, and I had to frantically explain to an increasingly annoyed person on the other side of the phone why they weren't getting their answer already. Mm-hmm. So there's one thing immediately. Offshoring responsibilities and jobs that could be held domestically, or at least within Western countries, to useless, scummy Indian companies, because a lot of the time the Indian organizations will basically set up quick schemes. So where they get like a warehouse or a factory, mm-hmm. put a load of phones in it, get a bunch of people off the street who have no idea what they're doing and go, answer calls. Here's a script, answer calls. At the very least, what I was doing was a bit more organized than that. Mm-hmm. But yes, I have had to do these sorts of jobs. And one of the things I immediately found out, which was that with most organizations, especially with insurance companies, the terms and conditions are designed deliberately in a way to screw over the consumer.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that we've all experienced.
Whole point of them being, I imagine they were quite long as well, right?
Well, yes, you get booklets that are multiple pages long, but even no matter how short you make the terms and conditions, I mean, even South Park did an episode on this where they had the Apple terms and conditions when you were scrolling through. Was it Apple? Yes, I think it was. If you got your iPhone update or something, it would have the massive long terms and conditions that you'd have to scroll through. And South Park made the joke that they could literally put anything in there. You could be agreeing to sell your soul. In the episode, I think it's you agree to be part of a human centipede experiment. And they just they randomly choose you and you've got no way out of it because, well, you agreed to the terms and conditions. And the joke was that it was only like, I think it was Kyle and Butters were the only ones who didn't actually go through all of the... No, it was just Kyle. Even Butters goes through the entirety of the terms and conditions. He goes, human centipede don't agree. And Kyle is one of the only people to not read it, even though that's something that we all do. And the organizations bank on you not mm-hmm. reading that, because not knowing, for instance, that if you damage your phone with it, you have to call up and report it within 48 hours in some instances, or else they will just reject your claim outright. You could damage your phone, say, for instance, it's still working mm-hmm. for days or even weeks afterwards, and then eventually stops working as a result of that. You don't know that, but you think, oh, I've got the insurance, I can call anytime. You call up, sorry, can't do anything, you didn't call us within 48 hours. That's not the same with all of the terms and conditions that these organizations set up, but depending on which phone company you were getting your insurance from, they did mm-hmm. put that kind of stuff in there.
I'm getting definite vibes of Edward Norton in Fight Club telling that person on the plane about
I have the deep, car. Intimate knowledge of these things.
Yeah, he's saying how companies have an acceptable threshold for how lethal their cars are. That sort
well,
of
it's,
thing.
It's the legally acceptable threshold mm-hmm. that means that if they can't be held legally liable for any issues that come off of the back of it. I used to be very skilled in this. I can't remember them off the top of my head. But in the UK, I think these are regulated by the FCA, the Financial Conduct Authority. Mm-hmm. When I was taking complaints, I used to be able to reel off the specific clauses from FCA legislation that meant that we were allowed to do the things that we were able to do. And these poor suckers on the other side of the phone who were just literally, I just want to be able to get my phone repaired without having to go down to the Indian shop down the road and spend 80 mm-hmm. quid on it. I would rather spend £25 excess to get it repaired professionally by you guys than have to take it to some dodgy guy who might not fix it properly and will cost me more. That's all they wanted to do. They literally just wanted to get the services that we had agreed to. But our job was somewhat to be a gatekeeper of that. Now, a lot of these terms and conditions are also set up in such a way that it's so that people can't take advantage of the organization. Because, of course, fixing a phone, fixing anything like that is a costly endeavor. You've got to pay for the labor, you've got to pay for the transport costs, so you want to still be able to make a profit on it. So that so a lot of the terms and conditions are set up in a way that we can't be scammed. But in mm-hmm. doing so, like I say, they lay a lot of these landmines and traps out there almost to encourage it so that we can scam our own customers, which was something that never sat right with me.
I'm not surprised you left, to be honest, because it does sound a bit soul-destroying.
After a few years, I had wanted to move up the ladder to management and actually get into a decent position there. Even when I first started, I was 18 years old and people said my demeanor and the way that I held myself, people thought I was like some kind of junior management being groomed to get to the top. No, I was just a guy who showed up in a white button-up shirt, unlike everybody else, and behaved myself and hit all of the targets that I was given, which was, you know, a lot of these companies set up targets in such a way that I think Count Dankula has actually done a video on this because he's worked for call center companies in the past as well. They'll set up all of these targets to make it basically impossible for the staff members to be able to hit every single one of them.
Oh, I know those.
Yes. So that if the manager, if a manager just doesn't like you, they have an excuse to be able to fire you at any time at their discretion.
There was a... when I worked for a bar group known as Revolutions, I started off as
I've been to a few of those. I will say, Revolution bars, I have never, ever seen one busy. They are always deserted and empty. What was yours like?
It was very, very busy.
Oh, really? I'm shocked.
And then they bumped up the prices and new competition moved in and it was very, very dead.
That might be why. The ones that I've seen have been in big cities like Manchester.
But there was a policy there where every... if you get... over 65% of people ordering doubles, then you get 20p for every double drink sold. But 65% is a very high percentage for double spirit drinks, right?
Yes.
And so more often than not, people, the employees wouldn't be able to meet that target. And even the people who are trying to upsell customers, ultimately it's down to the customer what drink they buy. You can't be like, no. So the only way you could do it is either if you're very, very lucky and you somehow manage to get a good day where you actually manage to get that bonus. But most of the time, you're just upselling in vain so that the company can make more money and then you get nothing because you don't meet this 65% quota to then be able to get the bonuses for all of the doubles you've sold. So that to me, struck me as... We're going to advertise it as
So let me just get this straight. You had to hit 65% of your sales had to be those upsells before you got the bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that means that every subsequent failure to do so proportionally decreases your chance of being able to get that bonus in the first place.
Yes.
That's very slimy.
Not only does it impede the quality of your service if they order something you don't want for a lot of people in the... I saw what was going on, so I didn't want to be like, well, I'm not going to blame the people there because it's the organization that structured this thing, because then they can advertise it as, okay, we give you lots of training, but we're minimum wage, but there is a chance for you to earn additional money if you're good at your job. But no matter how good you are, you can't make decisions for the customers, right?
No, but I understand what they're going for, because in bar jobs that I've worked before that haven't been part of larger chain brands like Revolution. Mm. They've just been normal pubs that are on local towns.
I much
towns.
Preferred working in those,
to be fair. They're always much nicer to work in. If you get the opportunity to choose between a chain pub or just a one-off locally owned pub, always go for the locally owned one-off pub.
By the way, I might add that I was only doing this because I wanted to have a job that I could do outside of my university hours. And quite often my lectures would go on to like 7 in the evening. So the only job I could really feasibly do that with would be bartending. So that's why I went into it.
It makes sense to be able to fit into a busy university schedule. Mm-hmm. But I've done jobs like that before, and they do encourage you to try and get people to get doubles or buy more drinks, but there's no monetary incentive to force you to do so. The only thing that they did do, which I found very scummy, was that they acted in a very commie way with the tips. I don't know if you've experienced this. You probably have.
I always put my foot down on that sort of stuff. Some people tried to be like, well, we're sharing the tips with
sharing everyone. The tips. Everybody put in the tip jar. If you get a tip, you've got to ring the bell and put it in the tip jar so everybody can see. If people asked me if I would like a tip, well, as far as I'm concerned, a tip is there for excellence of service. Excellence of service provided by an individual, not the whole team as in its entirety, because only one person is serving you, the customer, that drink at any one time. So if I was getting tips, if they say, hey, do you want a tip? I would be like, keep it down and pass it like proper shady.
Meet me in the hallway.
And just like pass it to me slowly, and I'll back pocket. That's what you do. Because otherwise, I always found that you end up getting a much, much lower proportion of the tips, especially if you contributed more tips to other people. Because not to sound big or anything, but back in the day when I was behind the bar, when I had my long flowing hair, lots of middle-aged women were very flirty with me, which is something I was uncomfortable with.
They never tip, though. That's the problem.
Oh, they did where I was from. Oh, they made sure...
North, they pay you, do they?
Yeah, yeah, they really do. And it was never something I was particularly comfortable with because, sadly, many of them tried to get handsy. But if they wanted to slip an extra fiver because I was just so darn charming, well, I'm not going to say no, am I? And that person standing to my side, they didn't get that extra fiver. That person standing to my left... They didn't get that extra fiver. I got that extra fiver, so it's mine.
You see...
This is slowly just turning into complaining about old jobs that we've
had. Has. But I'm going to finish off my one complaint, then we're actually
going to get into it.
But no, my experience was that they would try and act all creepy and weird, and then they'll be like, oh, give us a free drink. Oh, I've been really nice to you. I'm just like, no, you've just made me feel uncomfortable. Now you're demanding more stuff from me.
No, once again, the worst part when I'd be going out glass collecting or something is when the older ladies in the pub would just feel that it's perfectly acceptable to give me a little whoop as I walk past. That's always the worst.
That's happened to me many times. I started off in the glass collecting grind before I went all the way up to pub manager. But still, I actually preferred the glass collecting. There's no pressure on you. You just go around collecting glasses. You can't really go wrong. It's not like making drinks.
Them.
It's not like making drinks for drunk people, though, where they're rowdy. Sometimes they knock them over and then refuse to pay for them. I'm just like, well, you did that, you idiot. But anyway, I'm not going to complain about my previous jobs because we will be here for days. But controlled obsolescence. There's a good start. So this is the practice of deliberately designing products to have a limited lifespan or become obsolete after a certain period of time in order to encourage consumers to buy new products. And you're probably familiar with this. It's a well-known phenomenon at this point. And one that's been caught out for being quite guilty of it recently are phone manufacturers. So they often release new models every year, don't they? Like you've got your Samsungs and your Apples where they release a new model every year and they have updated features and specifications. But
well, let's just say with Samsung, some of those updated features in the past have proven to be quite explosive. And oftentimes... Do you remember that scandal from back in the day when people, Samsung, I think it was Note 3 perhaps, just set on fire in people's pockets when they weren't even doing anything with
it? Big hit in Ireland for some reason.
What a shock.
I think that the purpose of this a lot of the time is to... You add these updates and you add them to the previous generations as well, but it basically bricks older phones or makes them more and more obsolete with lots of bloatware that's unnecessary to their running. For example, this happens with Windows as well, where older versions are given software with higher specifications, which makes it run less smoothly and encourages people to then get a newer version because they think, clearly my phone isn't up to the job anymore. Maybe it's degraded. Whereas the fact of the matter is that the updates on the system itself have been using more and more of the capacity of the hardware to the detriment of its performance, which isn't really in the consumer's interest, but it's in the phone company's interest. And most people don't actually know the implications of the updates when they have them installed.
Now, I can add to this in two ways. One, my phone is currently trying constantly to encourage me to get to updates. I do not have auto update on my phone right now, but it will constantly interrupt me while I'm doing something else on my phone to try and get me to update it. And I always refuse because the updates, like you say, often make it run worse because it's filling it up with bloatware. So that's something that I'm trying to do because as far as I'm concerned, I have my phone. It does what I need it to. I don't care to upgrade or get a new one because my contract's already run out, I think. I'm just on like a monthly basis right now. So I don't need the new phone, but it desperately wants me to get the new phone. The other thing is I can verify this myself because as well as the phone insurance from my previous job, we also handled software problems. And you typically, when you get the phone, you get offered 2 years insurance for damage, loss, and theft. And then you also get the 1 year technical warranty on it. And the technical warranty just covers if there is an issue with the phone that you have not caused, then you can call up and without having to pay any excess, we will fix it for you because that is a problem with the phone that you haven't caused in any way. So that's our responsibility. We'll take that. What you'll find is generally, or at least a trend that I noticed, that all of the software difficulty calls would start to come up maybe a year and a half to 2 years after the phone was initially released, which would be when most of the people originally got them, which handily puts them outside of that warranty zone, meaning that all of a sudden, well, we can't cover it under the warranty, but if you pay £50 excess, we can get it fixed under accidental damage insurance, for instance.
Funny how they can make more money off of making a poor product, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a strange industry where you can make something that fails and then somehow be financially rewarded for it.
Well, it's because all of these organizations, they've all got very deep embedded relationships with one another. So I imagine it's a, we'll scratch your back, you scratch ours.
I also find it strange as well, this sort of right to repair conversation, that companies will more than happily say, okay, well, if you've even so much as touched your product to see what the problem is, your warranty is void, you can't repair it with us anymore. You've either got to pay money or refuse to repair it whatsoever, which always seems a bit strange.
Yes. Me. One of the things with that, I think, is the fact of if you have tried to repair it just using your own thing, even if you, say, have opened up your phone, which is much, much, much more difficult to do than it used to be because you used to have the openable devices, whereas now they're completely sealed, so which is to make it much more obvious to find if you have opened up your device and tried to do it yourself. But if they found that, say, you'd opened up the back of it, looked at the circuit board and found that some of the soldering had just already been a bit rubbish by the time you got the phone, and you just, say, put a little solder to yourself, they will check that, they will find that, and then they will say, they will ring you up and say, sorry, we can't repair this anymore because you've tampered with the device, because they say one of the things that you need to do is, especially with Apple, for instance, you're only allowed to get Apple repairs done by Apple certified factories.
It's and this just was, a scam, isn't it?
It is absolutely just a scam. Not every company does this. I think Samsung and some of the other organizations did not do that, but Apple was very, very strict on that. If you ever took it to any organization or factory that wasn't theirs to get it repaired, you no longer have warranty, you no longer have rights under Apple, even if what the other organizations were offering was cheaper.
And on the topic of Apple, I actually have a little extract from an article from Euro Consumers, which I find is quite a funny name for a website. Yes, we are consumers, we are Euro Consumers. Seems very dehumanizing, but it's also some of the worst written journalism I've ever read. It starts off May 29 in Italy, rather than the 29th of May in Italy. The Administrative Court of Lazio confirmed the penalty of 10 million euros imposed on October 24th, 2019 by the Italian Antitrust Authority against Apple for unfair and aggressive commercial practices in relation to updating the iOS operating system. Apple, despite being aware of the damage that updates could have produced on the iPhone 6 series, deliberately failed to inform the consumers who, on the contrary, were pushed to proceed with the updates. This lack of information and loyalty from Apple forced the consumers to replace a product that they otherwise would not have replaced, voluntarily creating a loss of performance. The same behavior was the focus of a class action in the United States, where the preliminary proposed settlement calls for Apple to pay consumers $25 for each iPhone with a minimum total payout of $310 million. Just like in Europe, American consumers contend that their phone's performance deteriorated after Apple's software updates. They said this misled them into believing their phones were near the end of their life cycles, requiring replacements or new batteries. It is unequivocal that Apple has implemented a conduct worldwide aiming at increasing the replacement of old iPhones through a phenomenon that can be traced back to the so-called planned obsolescence. So they name it here. But this is a very good example of a company being very scummy. They're deliberately, it seems, introducing updates for their software.
Now, I think this is one that people may or may not remember. And it's not exactly going to show that it was purposefully done to ruin people's phones or anything. Well, some might argue that it was. But do you remember when there was that notorious Apple update at the same time as U2 releasing their new album?
Oh, yeah.
And the update, without asking people's consent or anything along those lines, automatically downloaded that album onto your iPhone. So many people were updating their iPhones and then all of a sudden finding that they just had a brand new U2 album on their phone that they did not want.
No one should go through that.
Exactly. It's a traumatic experience to go through. Now, once again, this does not show that it's necessarily evil to the consumer to do that, because I assume, I didn't have an iPhone at the time, but I can assume that you could just delete the album off your phone. But it is very telling as to the kinds of practices that these organizations do, which is they will make agreements with other outside people that you, the consumer, have not made any sort of agreement with against you, and will do things without your permission, almost in a clandestine manner.
Yeah, and it, although it's not so bad to give you something for free that you haven't asked for as it is to take something from you without asking.
Yeah, but if someone hands me a turd, I don't care if I don't care that I didn't ask for it and it's free. You've still handed me a turd. I've not listened to that U2 album, by the way. So if it is actually all right, I apologize. If you're a big U2 fan, if you know what the Edge keeps under his beanie, I really do apologize. But I don't like U2.
Keeps a little figurine of Tim Pool.
I thought he keeps Tim Pool under his beanie. No, but what you were talking about then, I am honestly shocked when organizations like Apple do get these antitrust legislation suits thrown against them. And I think it's mainly for show, for the public theater of it, to be honest, because these organizations, whatever fines are thrown their way or regulations are put in place, oftentimes are more than low enough for them to be able to absorb it into any overhead costs that they already have. And oftentimes the regulations just give more room for more influence. When we've discussed regulation in the past and monopoly on this show, it mainly gives organizations and the agents within those organizations more opportunity for regulatory capture, more places and positions where, say, higher ups in these corporations can, for instance, if they decide, oh, I don't like being the head of a corporation anymore, I'll just be part of the regulatory body that governs it. That's always what happens. It's more room for these people to shift positions if and when things go wrong for them, so that they can quickly and quietly escape from the media spotlight.
That's kind of what happened with Microsoft, wasn't it? Because we covered this in a previous Contemplations quite some time ago, where Microsoft were falling afoul of antitrust suits, and therefore they donated lots of money to the political parties to get them off their back. And mysteriously, they then became the group that the government and Congress would invite in to write up antitrust legislation, obviously to the expense of their competitors.
Very interesting when and how that happens. And then you also find that those same large organizations, because once again, if you want to be a corporation, you need to get chartered by the government. And then, say, if you want to do a corporate merger, that also needs to be agreed to and okayed by the regulatory bodies. There is a lot of incestuous relationships going on in these places. Mm-hmm. And that just shows to me that there is no... there's a lot of bias going on. There's a lot of interplay going on there. And then inevitably, these massive corporations end up the beneficiaries of massive government handouts from subsidies.
Funny that, isn't it?
It is. It is very
Some
funny.
Some sort of rotation of money, in that the companies donate money to the candidates, and the candidates then scratch their back in return and give them advantages over their competitors, worth probably far more than the donations, to be fair.
Yeah, just look into, for instance, the amount of money that an organization like Amazon gets from the US government year in, year out. I think it might reach the billions. It might be $1 billion, but I know for a fact it's definitely in the millions.
They certainly don't need the money, do they? That's for sure.
Well, somebody must, or else why are they getting it?
So, another product that's well known for controlled obsolescence is light bulbs. So, supposedly, a lot of light bulbs have been designed so that they burn out after a certain number of hours. And this obviously encourages consumers to replace light bulbs more and more often. So, here I have an article from an outlet called boingboing.net, which sounds very reputable.
We're only going for the classiest sources today.
Yeah.
EU Consumer, otherwise known as MPC Mag, and Boing Boing.
Well, these are the only
outlets.
Are
we going to howsyourmissus.net next?
Well, none of the mainstream outlets actually talk about this kind of stuff. Stuff that would, if you knew about it, if for the short amount of time someone could invest in reading about it, would change their habits, their spending habits, and improve their life in a tangible way. But God forbid the mainstream media actually help people.
Well, once again, just as another example of how the snakes within the media and the corporations and the government all tend to slide between these different positions, with the recent release of the Twitter files by Matt Hancock and Isabel Oakeshott, the woman that he gave all of that information to, we saw immediately, I didn't even realise that this was the case, that George Osborne, was he the former Chancellor of the Conservative Party when, they're still in government, but he was in government. Immediately after moving out of position within the government, he went to a senior editor position at the Evening Standard. So one of the people determining what headlines and what news is filtered through to the public in a massive media organization is somebody who knows all of these politicians personally, who is friends with all of these politicians personally, still probably meets up for drinks on the weekends in Westminster with all of these people. He's in charge of what news gets filtered through to you, the public.
Mm-hmm.
Very shady.
Oh yeah, definitely. There is a weird sort of symbiotic relationship between the media and politicians, aren't there? So, back to this article titled, "For 90 years, light bulbs were designed to burn out. Now that's coming to LED bulbs." So it says, "In 1924, representatives of the world's leading light bulb manufacturers formed Phoebus, a cartel that fixed the average life of an incandescent bulb at 1,000 hours, ensuring that people would have to regularly buy bulbs and keep the manufacturers in business. But hardware store LED bulbs have a typical duty cycle of 25,000 hours, meaning that the average American household will only have to buy new bulbs every 42 years or so. So basically once every house you live in, maybe, and if you live for a reasonably long time and you only live in two houses." So that's a terrible metric. I don't know what I'm saying. But you get the idea. It's not very much. The lighting industry is panicked about socket saturation when all household bulbs have been replaced with long-lasting LED bulbs. I don't like LED, by the way. They're too bright. They're not as natural as the other ones, the sort of more orangey ones.
Well, I mean, I have complained to no end on Twitter about LED headlights being used in cars, blinding me. And to all of you people who responded to my tweet that one time saying, "Oh, you don't have to just look at the headlights." You know, when I've got them reflected in my side mirrors straight into my eyes from some prick who refuses to overtake me no matter how much I slow down and try and wave him past. That's what I'm complaining about. I can't really do that much about that. I know I've got my main mirror that I can use and I can flip it down so that I don't get the headlights straight in my eyes from that, but the side mirrors still get in my eyes and I hate it. Stop it.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotusheaters.com.